confronting authors with real questions about the writing process, the difficult and disheartening publishing industry, and why anyone would choose to torture themselves in the world of writing, this is the Literally Podcast with your host, writer, runner, and the literary voice of Ogden, Utah, Case Johnston. Exposing literature, the authors, the business, the process. The Literally Podcast.
This is Case Johnston. This is the Literally Podcast. We're broadcasting from my home in Ogden, Utah. Today we have author Misty Bell Stiers to talk about her book, Witch Please. The book is coming out. It was officially launched May 2nd of this year, something I'm extremely happy about is that we May 1st of this year. Okay, May 1st. It's a difference because that's one day that you can put money in her pockets. I'm really excited about it because my wife and I get to be in New York City for the book launch on May 1st, and we've been looking forward to it forever. And it's really funny in the publishing world how things are all about wait, and then speed up fast. What's the saying? Wait.
Go.
Yeah, that's how the publishing world is. And so we get to be there at the launch of Misty's book in Manhattan on May 1st. May 1st. Okay. But we're going to be there no matter what. We will start celebrating this book on April 29th. That's for sure.
Sweet.
Yes.
Straight.
Yeah, all the way through because it's really exciting. When we've done this podcast, everybody that I've brought on has been a friend because of writing. I met them through writing. Then we became friends. Most of them, some of those have not become friends since, but that's rare. I mean, most of them are friends of mine and we've become friends because of writing. This is different. I've been known Misty since 2002, and I can't remember when we were in Manhattan, Kansas, but that might've been 2002 or 2003, one of the two. And we became really, really close friends, and then we became writers, which is the opposite of everybody else, where we became writers, we became friends because of writing. And so I can't tell you how excited I am today. It's
Misty, Case said we have to keep this under 3 hours.
Yes,
you cool
yes,
with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Brandon's going to cut me at 45 minutes, which was good. But welcome, Misty. I'm so excited for the book. I'm so excited for its launch, and to me personally, outside of just being a reader, I feel like we, as families who are friends, we've got another child to celebrate.
Yay!
So, welcome, Misty.
Where is she right now?
Where are you exactly?
I'm sitting on my bed in my bedroom because there's not room for a chair in Hell's Kitchen, New York City. I can see
Hell's Kitchen's
the Hudson. Mm-hmm. I can see almost the Hudson River from where I'm looking out my window.
Very cool.
Yeah. I've spent many nights on the couch at their place, and it's a great place. Yeah. Brandon asked, Hell's Kitchen's really a place.
It's a real place, yeah. And I just happen to live there. It's serendipitous.
So Misty's book is Witch Please, and I'll do my best to summarize it. It's an introduction to Wiccan beliefs through personal narrative and memoir, sprinkled with informative, research-based information to give people who don't know a lot about Wicca a glimpse into what it is to be Wiccan living today in the United States, and specifically in New York City. Did I get that about right?
It's perfect.
Okay, good. It's a really lovely book. It's warm.
Like hot.
There are moments. It's warm. It's a read that is unintimidating. It's a read that it's full of family. I know that you will not regret it if you pick it up. So I think today we'll start with Misty reading, and then we'll let her talk a lot more than letting me talk, because that's always better.
All right. I got to put my glasses on because I'm old.
Yeah, well, I know the feeling. And feel free to intro what you're going to read, so on and so forth.
Sure. So what the part that I'm getting ready to read now, I have a chapter in my book where I go through our holidays and what we celebrate. And all of them are pagan holidays. And then I get to Yule and we celebrate Christmas like nobody's business at my house.
Yeah.
And I explain why and how I've managed to legitimize that in our house and explain to my husband why.
And I found it really interesting that Yule log, which makes it into our mainstream Christian, you know, vernacular. Song. What would you say? Yeah, vernacular. Is named after this festival.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, after this, which is after right. This holiday.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right.
All right, so I'll start with a little bit about Santa Claus. Abundance. That word will lead us straight to another, more commercial element of the Christmas holiday. Santa Claus. I'm sure. In fact, I know that his roots at some point in the distant past were much more altruistic. Somehow, through the years, Santa has increasingly become a star of the season, the followers of the original holiday as well as others. We do not leave him behind in my family either. I confess that I get excited about Christmas morning as the kids do. We hang the stockings, we write the letters, we make the annual pilgrimage to Macy's to meet the man himself. And while we stress to Samir and Wiley that it is important to give as to receive, that the season is about bringing light back into the world, there is another lesson running underneath all of this that I truly treasure. Santa is magic. Christmas morning with its surprise and love and anticipation is as magical as I can possibly conceive. What's even more amazing to me is that as a society, as a people, we have all silently agreed to this magic. Children will talk excitedly about Santa to whomever is closest to them at that time of year, and inevitably, the person on the other end of the conversation will smile and join in, regardless of background or belief. Astoundingly, we all, for a short period of time every year, agree that magic is important, that wonder is worth cultivating. In doing so, each of us brings into the darkness of winter the bright light of belief. Belief in flying reindeer and jolly men, and elves who know how to make just the right toy for every child. We go to the stores and donate toys for children whose families may have a hard time perpetuating the myth. We all, regardless of our background, virtually hold hands and bring a tangible amount of magic into the world. We protect it, guard it, and joyfully participate in it. I see all this as a reminder that holding on to the magic of our childhood, the wonder we have for the world, is priceless and absolutely necessary. The simple deed of actively living the story, participating in the magic every year, opens my heart to recognizing so many other small moments of grace that happen around me during that time. When I am in the mode of keenly living in a wondrous story, I am more adept at seeing all the other wondrous things happening near me. I am more likely to stop and wonder at a snowfall, or feel my breath catch at a song carol, or even feel touched by a simple happy holidays, because I'm consciously aware of all the light and joy toward which all of us are putting our energy. It reminds me that I should be living like that all the time. It reminds me that I should be putting forth the joy and love in my heart year round, that regardless of what we believe, we all create a truly magical world together when we decide to do so. All it takes is each of us deciding it can be done. I need to make that decision more often.
Thank you. I love this passage. And I think that the reason why I love it, and I hope that you can explain it to us more, is that it really, I think it connects to everybody in the sense that we believe in this magic once a year. You know,
yeah.
And that it's not just within our homes, but we walk outside and everybody's sharing in the same belief system that has, well, and you'll see in the book has a lot more pagan roots than is pagan the wrong word? Wiccan?
No, pagan is fine.
Yeah. Roots than we suspect. What I found in the book was really, really interesting is the way in which are the holidays that most of us celebrate have been around within this Wiccan tradition for so long. And it's not that they've just been around. It's that they really mirror the same dates within the year, right?
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is in the sense of what do these specific dates, and you can just pick a few if you want to, say about a larger cultural, global kind of connectedness?
Well, I think that, you know, the pagan traditions are things that, you know, Wicca has sort of absorbed as their own. And they all fall on natural events. And I think a lot of the holidays of the major religions, specifically the Abrahamic religions, have holidays that fall similar in similar places through the calendar year, because people were already celebrating. And if you want to, you know, inspire people to come together and be joyous and celebrate, you want to sort of align what you're giving them to something they already feel strongly about. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those pagan traditions align perfectly with the messages that the church was giving, right? We just celebrated Astera a couple weeks ago, which is the celebration of the spring equinox. And it's a celebration of rebirth, you know? It's a celebration of the fact that in many ways the world died for a while, and it was cold and it was dark and there wasn't any, the trees lost their leaves and we lost our sun, and it all came back and the light re-entered the world. And it's by no coincidence that, you know, Christians are celebrating Easter and the return of the light and the, you know, resurrection of their Savior mirrors exactly what's happening in the world around us anyway. And I think that, you know, as people who live in this environment and share this world, you know, our lives and our attitudes, I think, naturally coincide with natural events. I mean, I think, yeah, there's a reason why people kind of get sad when it rains. And, yeah. You know, we're tied consciously or not to the natural occurrences that surround us. And I think those holidays, you know, just follow the rhythms that naturally happen as the year progresses anyway.
Yeah, I found it really interesting. And this is something I learned a lot with the book. And I've known Misty a really long time. And we've had long conversations about all of this, because we were both raised Catholic and we both kind of were not Catholic, you know, and we've talked about why, and that's a whole different podcast. But I learned a lot from this book, and a lot came with the holidays, and a lot came with the way in which we were connected to the world. One that was really intrigued me is the idea that the Wiccan New Year is right next to Halloween. And how, and in my brain, of course, these things started to, like, you know, click. No one, I mean, there's a reason why there's a connection there. But from the book, I found that it's not the connection that most people make. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people associate at least the pagan Halloween with this idea of sort of evil spirits and ghosts. And, you know, we grew up celebrating All Saints Day the next day. So, you know, it was about sort of scaring away all of the bad stuff so that you could celebrate all of the good stuff. And, you know, in fact, Halloween is very much about, you know, honoring the people that came before you and helped clear that path, and taking a moment to, like, really understand that while people came before and brought you to this place, and you have, you know, grandparents and great grandparents, but also the people who have touched your lives that, you know, might not necessarily be related, but are still, you know, affected to you. And, you know, and understanding that in turn, you are that person to the people around you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you honor those stories? And how do you keep those people alive in a really true and honest and, you know, authentic way? And, you know, it comes with all of the, like, getting dressed up and celebrating and sharing the, you know, abundance. But, you know, it's very much tied to the idea of treasuring, you know, all of the people that sort of laid the path for you before you even were a spark in somebody's eye.
Yeah, and that's, I think that thematically for the book, I think you've touched on what I took from it a lot of times, is honor the past, those people who got you here, try to best to be in the present, and look forward to the future. And I think thematically that I mean, there were points in this book, and even having known you for a long time, I was taking notes and saying, you know what, this is something that I think that could improve my life, you know, in the sense of, like, I'm going to take chapters or paragraphs at a time that I would say, God, I need to put that into my life. This sense of, like, you know, this connectedness to other people where we can be so insular. And I really took it away from it, the chapter where you talked, and I think this might have still been the holiday chapter, which was a really long, good, full, thorough chapter that tied all these, that went through all of the Wiccan holidays. I think the part that really stuck with me too is with you and your family sitting down together and recreating recipes from those of the past. And I think that that was so emblematic of this larger book, that it was like, you know, this is us, but we are part of, we're not just part of us, and we're a really close, tight, loving family, but this close, loving family came from generations of this stuff. Can you take us through some of those cooking experiences with recipes and their purpose within this overall higher concept that you're trying to share with people?
Yeah, I think it makes me really happy to say that you found parts that you could identify with, because I feel like I wrote this as an introduction to, you know, this is how I live my life and this is what I believe, and it's not as weird as you might think. Right. I'm weird, but my beliefs might not aren't quite as that. And I'm hoping that, you know, it helps provide people exactly what you said, like ways to be a little bit more connected, regardless of like the religious beliefs. And one way we do that here is huge through cooking. It's always something that I've felt really passionate about because it makes me feel like I'm caring for people. And it's something that's easy to share between generations. So we have, you know, every solstice in the summer, we make chocolate pudding cake, which is this recipe that my mom got from her mom. And I remember it being this huge deal because my mom would make it only on special occasions. My dad did not like it, so I always knew I was going to get extra.
Yeah.
And it was like this really special thing. And so now, like in the middle of summer, we get to make this meal. And as I make it, like as I make this cake, I get to tell my daughter and my son this story about how their great grandma gave their great great grandma gave their, you know, grandma these recipes. And this is my experience with it as I was growing up. And, you know, we get to build another experience on that. And, you know, it's not, I try to make it so that every meal that we share on a holiday has ties to, you know, something about our past and something to look forward to about our future. Like, it's always, you know, we're there in the present doing it. So like, where is it gonna lead us? And, you know, and it's not just old recipes. Like Samira and I have banana bread that we make, and it's her recipe. Mm-hmm. And so when I keep a book. My grimoire is really just a collection of recipes, and, you know, it has recipes in it that we've made ourselves. So not only are we sort of, you know, absorbing the stories of the past, but we're writing our own story. So someday she's going to open up this book, or Wiley will open up this book, and there will be recipes that they wrote, and they can tell their kids about how they did that. And I guess it's my way of trying to show them that, you know, we're on the continuum, but it's not like they have the power to participate in it and participate in their own way. You know, I feel really strongly about trying to provide that for them. Like, mm-hmm. You know, there are all these stories and all these sort of wonderful people that, you know, we have looked to and we have gratitude to, and that we owe so much. But at the same time, like, that doesn't mean that, like, there's sacrifice involved. It's celebratory. It's not indebtedness. And, you know, the way that I can reinforce that, I feel like, is to say, you know, they have given us these stories, and now you write your story so you can pass that on too. And I don't know if that answered your question exactly, but yeah, it's every, yeah, I try to include our special recipe, at least one for every holiday. Everything from my great aunt's etouffee to my mom's chocolate pudding cake.
Yeah, I know, it answered it wonderfully in the sense that, you know, I think that there's a lot of things that this book does. I think it clears up a lot of people's misconceptions, you know, and it does it wonderfully. And like I said at the beginning of the podcast, it does it warmly, and it shows that that this is being Wiccan is really, it's all about just, it's really all about connection. You know, it's all about just being part of something bigger. And when I read those recipes, you know, I mean, that I did. And because in the way I saw it, I mean, there's quite a bit of time spent saying that a lot of these misconceptions aren't real. You know, I mean, these are not the truth about this, you know, like the big pot where you're throwing in, you know, frog's tails and all that stuff. But there is and the way I saw these recipes is the magic is created with, you know, with the with the salt and the thyme and the and you know, the sugar and the dough, and the magic comes from that. And so in that sense, you know, we are tied, like to Santa in the way that Misty described it earlier, we are tied to a larger magic. And I think the book, to me, in so many ways, and in the way that I feel about this, and this is being completely honest, is I've known Misty for 15-16 years, but the book taught me stuff, you know. And so it taught me things that recognize that when you and your family are cooking, that you are, in a way, putting magic into a bowl, and you are making something beautiful and something sustaining and something that, in the sense that when you eat something, it keeps you alive. I mean, that is magical. And the book, if I could encapsulate it for those of you who should buy it, all of you, that's the feeling of the book that I got when I walked away.
I have a question then, Case. Craft and style, how... You know, can it overcome substance? Can substance affect the craft and stuff? Like, when do they compete? Do they all have to be there? You know, are there different levels of each?
Well, it depends on, like, how you rate a book. Like, you know, you can have somebody who writes amazing and the book is boring.
Yeah.
I think that's my style.
your stuff is funny. You have humor in your stories.
You know, or you have somebody who's a great storyteller, but their sentences aren't that good.
So, because I'm trying to figure out why you like the book so much,
and I think that's exactly it. It's a great mix of three things. It's a mix of, we get to learn a lot, but when you're in the middle of learning it, you don't feel as if it's a teacher like lecturing. It's somebody who's brought you into the home, who's leads you through these things with warm, close stories to family, and you walk away from each chapter like feeling part of it. And that's why it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, Misty. I don't think you expected that, did you?
I did not expect
that. But Brandon pushed me there. He pushed me. But that's why, because you walk away from each chapter learning something without feeling as if you read like the encyclopedia, because the voice throughout doesn't change, even within the recipes, even with the discussion of the, and I am talking, Mary's going to kill me. even with the discussion of like the holidays, when you're getting a lot of this information, it's still Misty's voice, the same warm voice that was talking about spending time with her kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. This is Case Johnson. This is Literally Podcast. We're broadcasting from my home in Ogden, Utah. Today, our guest is Misty Bell Stiers. Her book, Witch Please, will be officially out May 1st, and you can pre-order it on Amazon, or even better, through your local independent bookstore, or through, can you get it from your publisher?
I don't know, to be honest. Right now, I just know IndieBound, Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Amazon.
Yep. Pre-order. So I'm going to read a couple words. I just kind of like, and you can just go where you want. This is my way of listening to my wife, because we have a date night after this. I don't know if you know this. We're going to.
Oh.
Yeah, we haven't had a lot of time together.
So do I. Not with your wife, but my wife.
Good. Yeah, see, this is good.
I wish I had a date with Mary after this.
I know. Hey, I wish I had a date with Sam. But this is ongoing. So I'm going to read a couple words, and then you can just talk about them, and because I think that they are pivotal to the story within the book. Pentacle. Does that work? I've never done this before.
Okay. She's supposed to respond.
Yes.
Because you said a few words, and that was
just
that
one.
Was one.
Yeah, okay. That's just one.
Word.
Well, I was going to do them in succession, so why don't you discuss that one? Because it's really interesting.
Sure. So the pentacle, most people associate with like the craft, and it carved on a floor somewhere. It's a star within the circle. It's really the holy symbol, if you want to call it that, of Wicca. It's sacred. And you'll see it a lot when you see like major religion symbols all lined up. We get the pentacle. It stands for the connection of all things, and each point on the star is the air, wind, earth, fire, and spirit, spirit being at the top. And it has a really interesting history because it was involved in all of the major religions at some point in time, because it was, you know, sacred from the beginning. Like, even one of the my favorite facts that I found out when I was looking up stuff for the book and for this particular thing was that the planet Venus actually traces the pentacle in the sky every 8 years. So it's it's sort of like this, like it's like the soul of shapes to me. Like it symbolizes so much, and it's consistently been a sign of life, and really only got sort of controversial when it was used to symbolize a secret like educational society, those darn philosophers and educators. and it was used for people to see that they belonged to this group. But, you know, it was really a religious symbol that was sort of all encompassing of beliefs for a very long time. And in the early 1900s, there was this resurgence of pagan belief in Europe. And it wasn't huge, but it was, you know, it's bubbling. And as it was bubbling, filmmaking was bubbling in the United States. And they found, that things that really reverberated with audiences were like being scared and, you know, spooky stories. Everybody loves that. And so people started using the pentacle as a symbol of evil. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out, I couldn't find out why, but that's what happened. And it started to be associated with Satanism and all sorts of other things. And so, you know, it kind of lost its original gift that it had been given. And, you know, now it's slowly being reclaimed. And I think that more and more people are finding it less and less offensive. I think for a long time, people were really straight up offended by the symbol. And it's perpetuated. Like, you know, you can't really watch a show that has evil things in it without seeing a pentacle somewhere in there. But it's, for me, like, I just love its story and about how, like, you know, the Jewish religion saw it as something being really sacred. The Knights of the Templar had it on their shields. Like, you know, it was just this amazing symbol of life and connectedness. And it somehow got lost along the way and is found its way back slowly. And, you know, like the rest of us, I suppose.
I'm still working on that. But yes, absolutely. And I found that so intriguing. And I think it, like you said, it's got a lot to do with Hollywood, right? And film and how influential Hollywood and film is. And so I found that, again, like I said, I learned so much. Okay, next word, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, this is
like a game.
It is like a game. All right, which this one, two words. It's actually two words this time.
Cheating.
Okay, so, sounds like. I know. I tell you, Mary's gonna kill me.
Sounds like unicorn.
No, it's no. Sounds like, okay. It sounds like Aunt Judy. Aunt Judy.
Oh, Aunt Judy.
Yeah.
Aunt Judy was my father's older sister, and she passed away before I knew I was writing this book. But a great deal of this book was written with her in mind. She was so Catholic. Wonderfully so. And, you know, she wrote for like a Catholic newsletter at her church. And, you know, she was just a sweet, scary Southern woman and all that means, you know, and she was a huge influence on my life when I was little. And, you know, actually just a few months ago, my mom sent me this book, this box full of books. And there were all these like little paperbacks of like the star, like the lives of saints and, you know, what, like what mortal sins are, like just like the whole set of books. There was like 20 of them and they were all signed inside, you know, to Misty Lee from my Aunt Judy. And so when I kind of started this whole journey of leaving Catholicism behind, I just sort of avoided talking to her about it because I was terrified that if she knew that I was giving up my faith in that way, that she would believe that I was going to hell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and not without, I mean, she wouldn't necessarily be wrong according to the beliefs of her church. And I didn't want to do that to her, but I especially didn't want to do that to me. And, you know, I do know people who know me and love me. And, I know they believe I'm going to hell because of my beliefs. So like the idea of telling her that I had found this pagan religion that really spoke to me, I just lived for, you know, a decade or more, just not talking to her about it and talking to her about everything else. She was absolutely pivotal in my life, and it felt horrible to not be honest with her in the way that I needed to be. And we planned our wedding, and you guys were there, and it was not a church wedding. It was a Wiccan wedding. Like we cast a circle, and, you know, we said our vows, and none of it was in the least bit Christian. And I remember thinking to myself before I saw her before the wedding, thinking to myself that this might be the last time that, that I would get to like hug and be with her, and things would be okay. And so she came to the wedding, and I didn't really see her much after. I saw her just like a split second, as you do with weddings, where like you walk around and you see everyone and you don't see anyone. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Sam on the drive home after the wedding. We drove from Kansas back to New York, and I remember we talked for a while about how like I was like already mourning the loss of that relationship. And a couple weeks later, I got an email, and the subject line was like, she had some questions. And I was like, well, here it is. Like, there's no avoid. And I avoided it because it was an email and you can avoid things like that. And I eventually was like, just to like, let it go, I opened up the email, and, you know, God damn it, she did her research, and she knew I was Wiccan, and she asked me, like, I looked up this stuff from your ceremony, and I saw that it was Wiccan, and are you a witch? And it didn't end there, because then she wanted me to give her books to read, and, you know, asked me for like resources so that she could learn more. And I had this moment where, like, it felt like the whole weight of the world left my shoulders, because she loved me still. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, really, like, aside from Sam, the only person in my life who not only acknowledged that this was a part of my life, but like was genuinely invested in learning more because it was a part of me. Mm-hmm. And like that experience, you know, as wonderful as it was for me just personally, like, changed, I think, my outlook on how I dealt with all kinds of things and people in my life, because, you know, the power of that kind of love, I think, is really, it's just a gift. And I think it's probably the greatest thing to like, just know that someone, regardless of how different you may be, and something that's really important, like it wasn't a small thing to her, could love you just because of it, not despite of it, but because of it. It was really wonderful. And I probably talked too long just then.
No, I think, well, the reason why I brought it up is I think it speaks, I really do think it speaks to the larger part of what you believe in when it comes to how Wicca brings that larger connectiveness to people and the people that come behind you. And I mean, in front of you. And so, I mean, we appreciate your honesty with that. I mean, it's a big part of the book. And it's probably the big part of the book that like I said, it kind of, it's emblematic of a lot of other relationships, but a lot of times with writers, they will avoid that one relationship in a book, and use something else to do its work. And Misty bravely used that experience in the book, to do what that experience in the book needed to do. And so, if you look at the book and it's a Witch Please, you think, okay, you know, maybe this isn't a book for me. And I think you couldn't be more wrong, because this book is really about love and family and relationships and where all of this belongs in the world. So that's why I brought up Aunt Judy real quick.
I got one more question.
Yep. I can't miss, but she's like, her face is frozen.
Don't we?
On FaceTime.
Don't we still have 2 hours?
No, we still have 2 hours.
I was promised 3 hours.
3 hours.
Yeah. We're just going to let this roll, Misty. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up and leave on my date, but you can keep talking.
Hey, actually, if that's the truth, I should bring Mary and Lucas downstairs and we could have a party. Mary said, I want to sit in. I said, well, why don't you just join us? And she said, no. And I said, all right. I do what you say. So the last question, because Brandon's doing really good at keeping us restrained, because now we're really starting to talk and, you know, we'd be here all night. If there was something that you wanted to tell everybody who's listening, who haven't read the book, about Wicca, what would it be? This isn't about book sales. I mean, this is about, like, right. what would you tell people? Because I think that a lot of people have a view that I would probably say most of the time is incorrect. What would you tell them about this belief system?
I would want them to know that there's what I believe is a lot more similar to what they believe than I think maybe you would get at first blush. Like, I think a lot of people see it as this really foreign, like, off the maps sort of way to live. Like, you know, it's all the drama that Hollywood has lent it, and all of the weirdness and the craziness. And really, it's very simple. Like, it's so incredibly simple, because it's just simply about trying to find your place in the world and then live that to your absolute best. And I think all of us, you know, like, everyone's trying to do that. And really the only difference is that, you know, I see the divine power as something that lives inside of all of the people I know and all of the things that are living. And, you know, a lot of people see that divine power, that same divine power, just outside of themselves. And that's really, it's like such a small, it's like, to me, it's so minuscule. You know, like, we all say prayers, they're just pointed to a different place. And I guess that's what I hope. When I was writing it, like, that's what I was hoping for, is that someone would read it and get to the end and be like, I get this. And I do some of this. And that it's less about, you know, declaring, you know, a religious belief, and more about just a simple way to look at things and live a life. And if that comes with a spiritual belief, great. If it doesn't, so be it. You know, like, we all have the ability to live in wonder. And I wish that for everyone that were to pick up my book or not, you know. I don't know. It sounds so cheesy, but...
No, it's not. It's not at all. It's not cheesy at all. And I think that's what I came away with, you know? Like, it's just a deeper understanding of this connection, you know? And thank you so much for joining us.
I just want to... before we wrap up here, Misty, how can we follow your progress on the book? And, you know, what social channels are you on? And where can we keep up with your work?
Oh, that's a great question. I am on Facebook, Misty Bell Stiers, Modern Witch. I am on Twitter, MB Stiers. And I have a website that I promise to update with fresh content soon, mistybellstiers.com. So really, it's just my name all over the place. It's really obnoxious, but there you have it.
Welcome to writing. Welcome. Thank you so much. Like I said at the beginning, to me, it's like for our families, and we're close. This is like it's like celebration of something new for us. We can't wait to see you in a month.
I can't wait to see you.
Less than a month. I mean, like 27 days now. Right. No, it's what's the 28th? It's like 24 days. Whew.
You should just fly out now. It's so the truth. Close. You might as well just be here.
It's the truth. And, you know, people pick up the book. It'll be worth all your time. And it'll be a good read. If I can read it in 5 days, which I did, because I am such a slow reader, you'll read it in like 3 hours and you'll be happy. You know, I mean, it's okay. And I'm thinking one more question, if Brandon will allow me. He just hit me with something on my knees. 2 minutes. So 2 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Is there going to be another book? Like, because.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I want there to be.
Yeah.
I want there. There's two.
Okay. The last chapter itself could be a whole book. As you read this, you'll see that. The last chapter itself could be a memoir. And Misty knows that. So is it? It's either the last chapter or the second last chapter. We can't wait for the next one. All right,
thank you
so much.
So much.
Thanks, Misty. Yep.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening. This is Misty, and if you could check out Lexicon and Line. They are the sponsor of this podcast, and I am eternally grateful to them.
That's perfect.
Check them out.
That was perfect.
We can use that for every podcast.
Cut and edit.